Welcome back to Intrepid Healthcare. I'm your host, Joe Lavelle, and I'm really excited to bring back two very special guests to our ICD-10 roundtable. We're going to get right to it. Today, we're joined by Brad Justice, Enterprise Account Director at Himagine Solutions. Brad is also one of the leading social media voices of ICD-10. Brad, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. New year, same problem.
Exactly. Before we introduce our next guest, please take a few seconds and inform the audience about you, your background, and a 10,000-foot overview of Himagine Solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. I'm really kind of a 20-year veteran in the healthcare staffing arena, working, starting out in the nursing area, and last 12 years working in the health information management vertical. Worked those last 12 years at K-Force in the K-Force Healthcare subsidiary, which was recently purchased and established as its own new standalone brand, Himagine Solutions. We now are the largest provider of medical coding staff, and we're focused on coding outsourcing, audits, education, registry services, and clinical documentation improvement.
Thank you, Brad. We're also joined today by Kathy McCoy, Director of Content Marketing for Health Fusion. Kathy's also one of the leading social media voices of ICD-10. Kathy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much, Joe. I'm very pleased to be here.
Great. Could you also take a few seconds and inform the audience about your background and a 10,000-foot overview of Health Fusion?
Absolutely. I've been in healthcare for about 25 years, starting in continuing medical education, and in healthcare IT for the last 5 years. Most recently, I have joined Health Fusion, and I'm very pleased to work with this group because they have a terrific company and product. It's an EHR integrated with practice management system and clearinghouse, as well as patient portal, and they were just named by Medical Economics in their Best EHRs 2014 survey as one of the top-ranking EHRs. They really provide a lot of excellent features, have been ICD-10 ready since December 2013, and have a lot to offer the providers and helping them streamline their practices.
Love to hear that. ICD-10 ready for over a year. Thank you, Kathy. My first two questions are for both of you, but I'll start with you, Kathy. How confident are you that ICD-10 won't be delayed in 2015, and what could be done to increase your confidence?
Well, coming in, I was thinking I'm about 80% confident that ICD-10 would not be delayed since Congress declined yesterday to delay it. However, in talking with you and Brad before we got started, you kind of shook my confidence a little bit. But I'd have to say, I think practices have had more time to get their minds around the whole idea and to prepare. Not that I think many of them are preparing at this point, unfortunately, but I think more than a year ago. And frankly, I think they're getting tired of hearing about ICD-10. I'm also hoping that they've reached an understanding that ICD-9 is way past its expiration date and a change is really necessary. In terms of what could be done to increase my confidence, if we could only keep politicians out of things they don't understand, we'd be fine. And as another expert, Steve Sisko, pointed out on Twitter earlier, if we could keep the AMA and MGMOA away from politicians, that would be good. But I don't think that's going to happen.
It's really encouraging, though, Kathy, because last year this time, we were hearing that practices were not there weren't a lot of activity at practice with respect to ICD-10, so that's great news. Brad, how confident are you that ICD-10 won't be delayed this year, and what could be done to increase your confidence?
I'm kind of in the same camp, obviously, as a proponent and understanding how important it is for our country to finally adopt it and get moving on. You know, you always have to look, make sure you're not looking through rose-colored glasses, although, you know, going into the holidays, I was probably about 50-50, reading all the different ways that it could still be delayed or taken down. You know, going into the last delay, I think everybody was pretty resolute that was behind ICD-10 that it was finally going to happen, and the sneak into the SGR bill was kind of a punch in the face from a bully. You know, I don't think everybody saw that coming. The exciting thing that I've saw, I don't think it happened right away, but I started to see a coalition of thought leaders, large health systems, people from all different walks of life that have started to kind of coalesce their thoughts around the topic, doing a lot more outreach to the bodies and parties that are against ICD-10. There's a high percentage of people that no matter what you tell them, how you explain it, where you tell them that it's not as bad as you think, are not going to care, and they're going to just continue to push back, hope it goes away, come up with every kind of smoke and mirror that they can just to keep kicking the can down the road. Although I do think that there are also a number of people in the government that are starting to see from these higher level thought leaders, especially the health systems that have spent, you know, millions of dollars, that this investment that you've required of us to get prepared for is something that we need to definitely finally move forward and get this over with. So I would say at this point I'm probably, you know, 70-80%. I'm going to go on the positive side because I do feel like the tide is going that way. If it comes down to horse trading at the last minute in a bill, I feel like there may be more people at the table that'll be fighting for 10 than before. But I'll keep my positive spin. In terms of what we need to do to feel secure and make myself feel secure about it, I think it's just a number of I think seeing more members of Congress actually speaking to ICD-10 as if they've heard the pros and cons and understand that there are pros and cons. But I do think the pros outweigh the cons. And, you know, these types of things that you're doing here, Joe, which it's a small piece, but we keep doing our part to get the message out to the people that the time is now to make this change.
Yeah, I think you both make some really great points. You know, as far as my confidence, if the AMA and MGMA both came out in support and were providing on a weekly basis tools and resources to help people, my confidence would be at 100%. I wish I knew the way to get both of them there. So my next question is, we've heard, and maybe this is a bad assumption, Kathy, you provided some information that might make that be true, but if providers did put their project on pause or slowed it down, what are some of the first things providers should be doing right now to either get their project going again or to start their project from the beginning? And Brad, we'll start with you this time.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, and I work with a lot of clients in all different phases. Some didn't stop at all. Some slowed down. Some completely stopped. And some really had never officially started. So, you know, you still have people in all of those buckets. It always seems to be with the turn of the new year. Now we're in 2015, the year it happens. People are all starting to get out of their holiday fog and saying, okay, I guess we actually do have to get ready for this. A lot of people are well ahead of that. But I think it goes back to hopefully at some point during this process, they've put together a detailed project plan. And that project plan has all of the things that need to be accomplished and all the stakeholders. And hopefully they have either internal or external project management support, which I know you've done successfully in the past, Joe, but getting back on track and putting that map together to know where are we now, where do we need to be, and what has to happen in between there, I think that's critical. And then obviously you've got to educate everyone. You've got to make sure that you're educating to the gaps of knowledge, documentation, making sure that your systems are up to date and that your software provider is actually going to deliver for you. And then really kind of start that internal PR campaign again so that you can get buy-in at least among your stakeholders. And, you know, physician champions are something that we've seen very successful because they're kind of the gap. They bridge the gap between all of the stakeholders, make sure that the other physicians buy in, that they're learning at least about the documentation changes for their specialties, and, you know, rally everyone around, get that committee back together so that all of those stakeholders from all the different parts of the organization can hold everybody accountable, update everyone, and make them feel comfortable they're on a path. Because again, even if you don't think it's going to happen, it's still scheduled to happen. And if you bet against it and it does, you know, you could be betting your institution, your organization, or your own job.
Wow. Wow, that's great, Brett. Kathy, if he left you some room, is there anything you would add to what else providers should do to get started in 2015?
I definitely agree with Brad. In terms of a detailed project plan, that's vital. If they don't have a plan, practices and institutions should make one with due dates and responsibilities assigned to specific people. And if they have an old one, they can just review and update it. And CMS has multiple resources that can help them with this, including videos and an online implementation guide. And I think they should go out and look for the training resources available. There are a lot of free resources out there that can help save practices money. For example, HealthFusion is going to begin offering webinars on ICD-10 for specific specialties in the next few months. And I've worked with them to develop a daily ICD-10 quiz, and those are available on healthfusion.com. The World Health Organization has an interactive self-learning tool that was mentioned on ICD-10 Watch. And there are many others. If they just Google free ICD-10 training, that'll give them a good start.
Great point. Very good point about going out and finding the resources. Okay, Intrepid Healthcare will return with our guests Brad Justice and Kathy McCoy after this quick break. We'll be right back.
At Javion, we know that healthcare providers do remarkable things every day. And we understand the pressures and challenges providers face in today's healthcare system. That's why we are helping providers by predicting and preventing financial and clinical waste. Through a suite of big data software solutions that combine clinical intelligence with deep machine learning technologies, we can stop the waste of resources and lives by stopping losses before they ever happen. And by doing this, we help providers focus on what they do best, delivering care. Javion, we help providers stay remarkable. Visit javion.com.
Okay, we're back with Brad Justice and Kathy McCoy. Kathy, we're still hearing about vendors that don't have an ICD-10 version ready and released to their customers. What can a practice do when they're in this situation?
Well, that's a big concern, and frankly, it's surprising that there are vendors out there who still are not ready. When we talked a year ago, I kind of was a proponent of requiring certification for software that they were ICD-10 ready, and I still think that would have been a good idea. I'm not sure if it's too late or not, but I would advise providers who have software that isn't ICD-10 ready to seriously consider whether that software is going to be able to support them in long term. An ICD-10 failure, especially given the multiple delays, is an indication of a lack of resources on the vendor's part or perhaps a lack of planning. The practice needs to consider whether the software is going to be able to support them through all the various requirements coming up, such as meaningful use stage 3, the new chronic care management code, and other CMS programs. And my feeling is if the software isn't able to support you now, it's better to cut bait and find something that will give you the tools you need to succeed before you're in over your head and finding you're having financial problems. There are certainly plenty of options out there. And as I mentioned earlier, Medical Economics did a great survey of EHRs asking providers who use the software how they would rate the software in various areas. That's a great guide. There are other resources such as the Black Book rankings that providers can look at, find software that's going to provide them what they need. So I would recommend that providers who are seeing their vendors are not giving them what they need, look around, find something that will support you, and move on.
Yeah, don't be afraid of the cost of changing, I think, is the key there. If somebody doesn't have a definitive plan for you when you're going to get your software and how it's going to get them to ICD-10 compliance. Good points. Brad, in your job, you probably have a very good perspective on whether the industry has enough resources to get us over the finish line in October. What's your perspective? Are there enough project managers, coders, everything else we're going to need to get this job done?
I would definitely say the answer to that is no, although the silver lining to that is I think last time as we were approaching the deadline, a lot of the larger organizations were utilizing some of the top talent. They had the resources to do it. they were thinking ahead and trying to, in effect, corner the market in terms of the resources. Well, a lot of those larger organizations have continued to move on that success and have not necessarily kept all the resources or had resources that were able to help them through certain stages of that, which releases a lot of great people into the community that have great knowledge working with those premier clients that now can help part that with some of the smaller organizations. So I think that's a silver lining. But there are still a lot of positions. If people are deciding at the last second to bring outside resources in, that group and pool of candidates is going to keep getting smaller. They may not be the best options available. So I think it's now time to look at the gaps in all of the positions on that project plan. Do you need outside help to help you with any of the pieces? And if so, start having the conversations with any company that would provide those services. I focus mostly in the medical coding area, and that's a position that already in the ICD-9 world is at a major shortage. So when you look at potential productivity loss coming out of go live for 10, you know, estimated anywhere from 30 to 70%, at least right when it happens, hopefully getting back closer to normal as time goes by, you're going to need extra resources. And you're not going to want to just throw somebody in that doesn't know anything about your facility, who may have some deficiencies in some of their skill sets, and you want to make sure you're complementing your existing team. So what we're starting to see in the industry, because of the fact that these are such critical positions, that there is a move afoot to start to look at baseline numbers of staff needed on the coding side. Say you normally would use 15 to 30 resources at a time in today's world, you know, partnering with a company like ours where maybe you say, let's lock in 10 people for an extended period of time, whether that be 1 year or 2 year, to make sure they're handpicked, they're dedicated to us, they're trained in our ways, and have ICD-10 training and dual coding experience. That way you're kind of beefing up your team. A lot of executives don't like to spend money on outside resources, but this needs to be looked at as risk mitigation, as a one-time event that you're basically betting on yourself to get through. And so I would definitely tell everyone that's looking, if they even think there's a possibility, err on the side of caution, and have the conversations now to secure those crucial resources.
Great advice. I'm interested in both your perspectives. Kathy, as a EHR practice management vendor and clearinghouse, and then Brad, as someone who provides resources to the industry on ICD-10 testing. So, Kathy, what advice would you give to our audience about testing from your perspective?
Well, I would say if providers haven't already, they need to talk to their vendors about testing. Is the vendor testing with CMS? There was testing last March, and they should ask about that. Did the vendor participate, and have they been successful? Health Fusion participated in the testing and scored between 98 and 99%, which put us in the upper tier of testers. And I think providers should look for these types of results and answers from their provider or from their vendors, both from that round of testing and in upcoming rounds. CMS is looking for volunteers right now, so providers need to be asking their vendors these questions, in my opinion.
I agree. Brad, do you have any advice based on what you're seeing? Are people asking for resources for testing yet?
Yeah, actually, kind of on a twofold. You know, obviously, like you said, CMS has extended the deadline, which I hope doesn't mean that people are not playing along, especially with all the, you know, the grief CMS got last year for not offering as many testing opportunities. So, you know, take advantage of that time window. I think that, like what Kathy said, obviously all of your software vendors testing, you don't want this to be a surprise at Go Live. You want to make sure that anything can be worked out. And because this is new for everyone, the best laid plans can fail, and it can actually help everyone involved in that process. When it comes to what I primarily focus on in the health information management world, you know, I consider also another form of testing to be dual coding. We've seen a huge demand in request for resources to allow staff at hospitals and large physician groups to allow their coding staff to start doing a percentage of coding in 10 so they can get that practice now. And then also don't forget, if you do have contract staff, let them be part of some of that, because if they're staying with you into the 10 world, you want to make sure that they're getting that hands-on experience as well. So I think that those drivers are already starting to create a demand for additional needs. It's smart to do. We've also seen a huge demand in actually the small group of people that can now audit ICD-10 charts and actually start to look at, you know, as this dual coding is happening, is it good? Is it correct? And what deficiencies and gaps are there in the documentation side? So take testing serious. Don't make this something that you learn if it's going to work the day it happens. And otherwise, it's going to be a bad day.
That's great. We're implementing a bonus question on our show between now and April 15th because we want to hear what people are thinking about HIMSS. I'll start with you, Brad. Are you attending HIMSS? And if so, what are your priorities? What do you hope to accomplish?
Yeah, actually, I got an email yesterday, and I was just offered the opportunity to be one of the HIMSS social media ambassadors. I was honored to be one of the inaugural class last year, and so I'm very excited about it. I'm just finalizing my plans just to make sure, but I definitely want to make that work. It's an amazing opportunity to get in front of a lot of people and see the latest and greatest in the health IT space. I think that you have such a group of thought leaders in the health IT space that do have real impact, large audiences, great blog readership, huge software companies that when they speak, people listen. And, you know, I think I have an opportunity to go and listen to where people are in terms of testing, where they are in terms of software readiness, and then try to leverage those groups of thought leaders to use their influence to further enhance the cause of ICD-10 going live in 2015.
Perfect. Kathy, are you attending HIMSS? If so, what do you hope to accomplish?
Unfortunately, I'm not planning to attend HIMSS at this point, but congratulations to Brad. He's a terrific social media ambassador, so I'm excited to hear about that.
Thank you.
If I were, I can tell you I'd want to learn more about interoperability and the progress being made there, opinions and thoughts on meaningful use stage 3, and, of course, about ICD-10. Will it go? Will it not? What's the status?
Well, obviously, we didn't coordinate ahead of time, so, Kathy, I'll throw a few plugs out there. I'd really be interested in hearing if you attend some of the HIMSS virtual sessions, and Intrepid Now will be broadcasting live from HIMSS for 3 days in three different settings. So there'll definitely be plenty of opportunities to gather a lot of remote content. So we all have that to look forward to. Brad and Kathy, I hate to say it, but we're about out of time. Before I let you go, where can people contact you and learn more about Brad First Himagine Solutions?
You can go to himaginesolutions.com. Himagine is the word imagine with an H in front of it. And my Twitter handle is Brad_justice, and justice is JUSTUS.
Perfect. And Kathy for Health Fusion?
Great. Thanks a lot. Well, as I mentioned, they can find us at healthfusion.com, and my Twitter handle is healthfusionkmc, as in K. McCoy, or also Kathy McCoy. And my email is kmccoy@healthfusion.com.
Brad and Kathy, I want to thank you both for sharing your great knowledge and for being here on the show.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Joe.
Good deal. That wraps this broadcast. On behalf of our guests, Brad Justice and Kathy McCoy, I'm Joe Lavelle, and we'll see you soon on Intrepid Healthcare. What you want, what you want, what you want.